Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, when your child's Asperger's diagnosis is abolished by the medical establishment, Hanna Rosin tells her conflicted family story. Why the SAT will become more like the ACT, did the SAT fail its own test? And we'll look at images today from a cool Time magazine photo project from the top of the brand new One World Trade Center and use it as an excuse to launch a new photo project of our own with you. But first, score one for Mayor de Blasio on affordable housing. Score one for a progressive developer, too. Can the Domino Sugar Factory agreement this week become a model for an expansive new era in affordable housing construction around the city? We welcome now, for the first time since taking office, Mayor de Blasio's Deputy Mayor for Housing and Economic Development, Alicia Glenn, and the mayor's chairman of the City Planning Commission, Carl Weisbrod. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC today. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Morning, Brian.
And let's talk first about this new development deal in Williamsburg, and then we'll broaden out to affordable housing policy generally. The old Domino Sugar Factory on the Brooklyn waterfront, you renegotiated a deal with the developer, Two Trees, to add more square feet of affordable housing and 40 more units. So who wants to tell us what's coming to the Domino Sugar site and why you think this sets a precedent?
Well, maybe I'll start because it went through, it's going through the land use process, and then the deputy mayor can talk more generally. But, you know, when we start these projects and they're approved to go into the land use process at city planning, it's a determination at that point that the application is complete, not that this is the final outcome. And here, this application started and certified about 4 months ago, and has been the subject of a lot of discussion. It's a much better site plan than the plan approved in 2010. But an important element for the Planning Commission and certainly for the de Blasio administration was to assure that the public got its value out of this project, which was principally to achieve as much affordable housing as we possibly could. But I think we wanted also to make a larger point, which is when a developer is seeking a substantial increase in value, we encourage that, but we want the public to share in that value. And that's what really has happened here.
So, Deputy Mayor Glenn, there was already going to be 30% affordable housing units, 660 out of 2,200 under the deal approved during the last administration. And that was high already by the usual standards, which are more typically 20% of units in a development like that. But you and the mayor pressed for more, and you got 40 more units. Why push Two Trees on that, and how did the deal go down?
Well, I think one thing that we should clarify is that in the old deal, the 30% was actually not technically locked down. Because the way we lock down the percentage of affordable housing is through the zoning resolution, what in fact was the case in the old deal was that we really only had a 20% requirement and the rest was going to be perhaps financed through other city programs. So one of the things that we thought was incredibly important with this transaction was to really tie it to what actions the City Planning Commission could take and now has in fact taken, which is to actually require the developer to do the square footage, which then of course does give you an opportunity to back into a certain number of units. And I think as Carl said, you know, for us, the benefits that the developer was seeking in this project were significant and appropriate for a developer who wants to build a really interesting and exciting project on the waterfront. But we felt that the degree to which the public needed to benefit even more from what we were able to provide him, it was appropriate to ask them to provide more units and more housing, not just more affordable housing, but affordable housing that was permanently affordable. Because when you get the increase in density, right, and the height, that stays forever, right? So our view is if we're going to be creating mixed income communities, and that's really where we want to go over time, we want to make sure that those units are permanently affordable so that those those neighborhoods continued to have that mixed income quality. So we were really able to do two things here: get more affordable housing for the neighborhood, make sure it was permanently affordable, and also make sure that we would see some actual construction happening in the foreseeable future. I mean, I think there are people around town who have felt that they haven't actually seen the results of these transactions that prior administrations have done. And so we're really excited that we could work with Two Trays to assure that the first building will go into the ground by the end of 2014 and that that building will include affordable housing.
Now, the press coverage since the deal has focused on the number of units, those extra 40 apartments. But I thought you were after a different prize, larger affordable apartments than in the previous version, because there is such a need, excuse me, in the city among families with children. So what's the story with that?
I think one of the advantages of just more affordable square feet is that the units themselves will have a much better mix and have more 2- and 3-bedroom apartments, and thus serve not just singles or couples, but also larger families. And that's all to the good, and really to the good of creating a stable, mixed-income, mixed-use neighborhood. This is one of the great things about this project, is not only the housing, but the fact that it also has almost 500,000 square feet of commercial space that will be for tech companies, creative companies, incubated new companies that are the city's economic future, and the ability of this project to integrate commercial development, economic development with housing and affordable housing is really one of the real gems of this endeavor.
Was this all city leverage, Carl, or do you also credit Jed Walentis and the other people at Two Trees for being voluntarily civic-minded here?
I would say it's both, and that's the nature of a collaboration, is that this is a developer who has a good track record, has done in Dumbo, as we've seen, an amazing job of providing the kind of space and neighborhood that that does point the way to a different economic future for the city, and his ability to and vision to do that at the Domino site is certainly something that we recognize and treasure, and his ability to work with us here is a win-win for everybody.
And Deputy Mayor Glenn, you must have talked some turkey with them. How much did you take out of their bottom line by getting this deal for extra affordable housing?
Well, Brian, you know it's not that simplistic. There's no bottom line. I mean, one of the things that people need to recognize is this is a very this is a phased project that's going to take many, many years to construct. And so what we were really focused on is what did we know that we could achieve in real time for people with respect to tying down the commitment to do the affordable housing and making sure that there was a viable financing plan to get this thing started. Long-term, large-scale plans are obviously subject to many complicated, issues with respect to the capital markets and where the market will be. But I think it was clear to everybody when we got around the table that there was an opportunity here for us to be able to get more out of the project and still make it financially feasible for our Two Trees.
Right, feasible. But when you say there's not a question of taking more out of the bottom line, isn't there? I mean, there was an article in the press the other day where developers were saying the 70-30 model won't work. If they're required to offer 30% of units below market rates, they won't have the necessary profit margins, which I think were pegged at an average 6% profit margin, needed to build at all, and that they can do that under 80-20, but not 70-30.
Well, Brian, let me just say, just to the amount of affordable square footage here is about 20% of the entire project. So the commercial space was also considered when arriving at the total amount of affordable housing. So it's
right. And so there we get back into the question of space versus number of units, because I think when they talked 80-20 during Bloomberg, it was number of apartments. And now we're looking at a different measure. You're saying instead of the 30% of the units being affordable, we should look at only 20% of the space is designated. So what's the right measure here?
Brian, I think one thing that's also very, very complicated about this is that there are several different statutes and incentive programs here that are overlapping, and it is very difficult to understand. But, you know, there is a requirement with respect to when you're incentivizing residential development through the 421A program, which is based on the number of units. But what the City Planning Commission has done is also providing additional height through the inclusionary housing program, which does back you into a square footage calculation. So one thing we want to be clear about is that, you know, we came into this negotiation in the middle of an existing ULURP application, and so we recognize that the complexity between the way in which our tax code and our zoning code work do not always overlap perfectly, and it makes it very confusing for the public and, quite frankly, for developers sometimes to really be able to plan their project and understand what they're eligible for.
So what's your... what precedent are you trying to set with this deal for mandatory inclusionary zoning? Is it 20% of square footage? Is it 30% of units? What would you say?
I would say on a project of this complexity and size, you can't say that this is an exact formula that will be applied in every single case. I would say this, that on mixed-use projects where there is both a commercial component and a residential component, the Planning Commission has made it pretty clear that it's going to look at the entire project in order to determine the appropriate amount of affordable housing. But again, I think this project, as Alicia said, this is a project that we came into in the middle. It is an unusual project given its size and its various different components. But I'd say the major lesson that one should take away from this is that when we are adding through the public approval process an enormous amount of value through additional square feet generally, as we are doing here, we're adding 200,000 square feet on top of what was approved in 2010, and we're adding a significant amount of height, 200 feet on several buildings above what was approved in 2010, which also contributes substantially to value, that the public should, through affordable housing particularly, should get its share of that enhanced value that we're providing to the private sector.
My guest on WNYC, Carl Weisbrod, chair of the City Planning Commission, just recently appointed by Mayor de Blasio, and Alicia Glenn, who he has appointed as deputy mayor for housing and economic development. And what does affordable mean in the case of the Domino Sugar development? Affordable for whom is such an important question, as you know, in the larger affordable housing movement. How many units for how much rent, or targeted to New Yorkers with how much income, how mixed income, and you use that term, deputy mayor, will this development be?
Right. Well, I think you're keying into an important point. And one of the things that we feel very strongly about is that, you know, for a long period of time, most of the city's efforts have been focused on a relatively narrow band of people when we talk about affordable housing. And so one of the things we do think is important with respect to our forward-looking plan is to get more inclusive, both including people who are at much lower incomes and recognizing that folks who are moderate income really are also facing an extraordinary affordability crisis. So with respect to Domino, what we were able to do is really stretch that band of affordability. Again, not to get too technical, but we base it on the average, the area median income, and we're going to be providing housing for families that are as low as 40% of AMI, which right now is roughly about $30,000 for a family of four, and then allowing a percentage of the affordable units to be set aside for people who are at 125% of AMI, which now with about $100,000 to $110,000 for a family of four. I mean, the affordability crisis or the rent burden that New Yorkers are facing is extreme, and it cuts across a lot of different incomes. But I think we're really focused on making sure that we can try to serve as many of those people across that spectrum as possible.
And go ahead, sorry.
No, and at the rents, and the formula, as it were, is generally set at 30% of your income is determined to be the most you should pay in rent. And so you can back into it depending on, you know, the AMI level and then the 30% formula.
And so, Carl, the mayor got a lot of praise from business interests for appointing you as Planning Commission chair with your background in real estate and Lower Manhattan recovery after 9/11 and the things you've done. But in the Post today, columnist Steve Cuozzo, one of those who praised your appointment, warned that the domino deal is not a sure thing because of pressure from your left. Specifically, he writes that demands are beginning for only union construction, which was not part of the deal, and from a broad progressive coalition that's, I think, holding a demonstration in about 45 minutes on the steps of City Hall to make more of the units for lower income residents. So not a done deal in those respects?
Well, I can only say the Planning Commission has a limited amount of jurisdiction here. We look at the land use issues and the impact on the neighborhood. They're clearly the final arbiter here is the City Council, but I think we feel that on the land use aspects of this project, this is a very, very good project. And there are other issues that certainly the council will have to consider, but I do think that we think this is a very, very good project.
So you might have a sell job to do yet to City Council, who would have the last word on this, and those issues might be in play, union construction requirements and the mix of affordable housing targeted to what incomes, yes?
Well, I think the council will do what the council will do. They are the final arbiters, but again, I would say, speaking from the Planning Commission, and Deputy Mayor might have more to say about this, but I think from the Planning Commission's perspective, we, the Planning Commission and its members, were very pleased with the outcome at this point.
And so, Deputy Mayor, the proponents of this deal could assume that the mayor will be in there lobbying for it aggressively with his allies in City Council?
Well, I'm not sure I would put it that way. I mean, our view is that we really drove a very, very good bargain that is significantly better than the prior plan, that really does incorporate many of our fundamental principles around affordable housing policy and comprehensive community development strategies. The mayor supports, obviously, the deal that we struck, and we hope that the council will continue to be supportive of this agenda. And I think we're going to get there. It's not a question of us lobbying. We're going to work very collaboratively with them to make sure that this project goes through and that it's a real model for the types of mixed-income, mixed-use development that also create quality jobs that's really going to be a hallmark of our administration.
Ms. Glenn, I want to step back for a minute and acknowledge your title and how it's different from past deputy mayors. Mayor Bloomberg had a deputy mayor for economic development and rebuilding. Mayor de Blasio created your position as deputy mayor for housing and economic development. So it's more like the name of the agency he used to work for in the federal government, Housing and Urban Development.
Yeah.
Does it say something important that those get officially linked?
I think it does. I mean, I think the mayor has been clear from the beginning of not just his campaign, but throughout his career, that housing is a critical part of his vision for New York City. And you know, my own personal background is always thinking that, you know, the fundamental building blocks of healthy communities and then ultimately a healthy economy is having quality housing for people at an array of incomes. And I think our view is that housing is not only in and of itself an incredibly important objective, but it also really links to our job creation strategies and to our place-based approaches to develop the whole city. It's a five-borough approach, and I think that other administrations have perhaps focused more intensely on a few key signature projects. And I think that we feel really strongly that what will make the city ultimately a stronger and better place and really continue to be a 21st century city that people want to emulate is by really going neighborhood by neighborhood and making sure that we have the housing, the retail, the commercial, all of the things that make really healthy neighborhoods, and that by propping all of that up, the whole city gets to be stronger. So So it's really, you know, many bricks in one building rather than focusing on just one big building.
And I see that your last 12 years were spent heading the Urban Investment Group at Goldman Sachs. And according to Cranes, you committed $2.8 billion to projects in low-income areas during that time. Was that a loss leader for Goldman Sachs for charitable and community relations purposes, or were you only investing in good business opportunities that happened to be in low-income areas?
Well, it's definitely not a philanthropic endeavor at all. It continues to be a double bottom line mission-driven business that had very healthy margins. It was really based on the premise that you can invest capital in neighborhoods and projects and businesses that are actually providing not just fair financial returns for the private sector, but also driving incredibly important social impacts. So, in fact, what I was doing at Goldman in many respects is exactly what we're going to be doing from the public sector side, which is investing in communities, investing in businesses, and really driving impacts that create a return for the private sector that's reasonable, but also is really thinking about what we're getting for the people and the communities of New York City. So it's really, you know, two sides of the same coin.
Does your experience suggest that there is a more narrow-minded, if I can use that term, investment and development community out there that is missing opportunities that you saw because of what your portfolio was at Goldman to make money while creating affordable housing? In other words, there are a lot of things that are not being done because the traditional business community just doesn't see the profitability in them?
I think there's some of that. I think that historically people have seen affordable housing as sort of a separate industry within the real estate and development industry. And I do think that that's something that we want to debunk because we really see affordable housing as integral to our development platform. And I do know from my own experience that you can get reasonable returns on your investment, especially if you're thinking about your long-term returns, right? I like to think a lot about it's not just how much money you can make in year one, but really don't we all make more money and do better when we have a longer-term view of what we're trying to accomplish. And I think the development community, who obviously I've worked with for years, I think really wants to be part of this agenda. I think that there's a myth that they don't want to work with us, and I think that the two trees example is exactly the right message for everybody, that there are thoughtful, progressive urban developers who understand how important our platform is, but also that ultimately it will create value for them. Because if we don't have a strong, healthy city, then really nobody's going to make money at the end of the day. So I don't see this as binary. I think that the real estate industry wants to be part of this agenda, and we've shown that we can work together and make sure that they can make money, but we can also do right for the people of New York.
And as chair of the City Planning Commission, Carl Weisbrot, and with your background in the industry, anything to add to that?
No, I think that it's for both for Alicia and me, we both have a lot of experience working with the real estate industry and with the development community, as well as working with communities. And I think the key here is bringing our knowledge of what a developer needs to make a project successful, and linking that with what makes sustainable communities, and assuring that there's a fair balance between recognizing a developer's risk and the need for a developer to make a profit on the one hand, and the need for the public to share in that upside in terms of affordable housing particularly, but other public amenities as well for communities. And if we can make that link successfully, and I think both Alicia and I have done this from other perspectives, I think we will have a very successful outcome here and some really terrific results that will benefit everybody.
We've got about 3 minutes left. Is there a tension between the administration's goals of raising wages in the city and lowering the cost of housing? Can you push a rise in labor costs in general and at the same time expect one of the city's most important commodities to become cheaper? Whoever wants it.
Well, I don't think there has to be necessarily a tension between those two things. I mean, I think those two things are going to rise in parallel. I mean, the more affordable housing that we are building, the less rent burden there will be for people. And so that should also help the inequality gap shrink tremendously. We don't see these two things as being in contrast with each other. There are going to be challenges with respect to making sure that the cost of particularly affordable housing, the construction cost, is reasonable, and I think that we can work with all the people in the industry to make sure that happens. But there's nothing inherently inconsistent between our focus on creating higher wage jobs for people in New York and also trying to drive an aggressive affordable housing program.
And let me just add to that, if I could, Brian, that one of the terrific elements of the Domino Project is the synergy between creating jobs on the one hand, appealing jobs, attractive jobs, high-paying jobs, through this project, both in construction, but also in the commercial space that's going to be created here, and the housing on the other hand. The two play off each other and mutually support each other.
And so, last question. Is development like this the only key to expanding affordable housing? I see you have a date already to announce the big picture housing agenda, May 1st. So either of you, how much of a preview can you give us before you go as to what else we can expect?
Well, I think, Brian, the key to remember is that the affordable housing plan is not just about new construction, although it will obviously be a huge part of our plan, making sure that we're looking at neighborhoods across the city in all five boroughs where we think there can be new construction that's supported by existing infrastructure or done in tandem with new infrastructure investment. But it's really important, and obviously folks who listen to this show know this as well as anybody, that the city and the feds have spent, you know, billions and billions of dollars investing in affordable housing for the past 30 or 40 years, and it's incredibly important that we not only lose not one of those units, but we also continue to invest in those units and preserve those units so that we have that as a continuing resource, because people live in those apartments, and those are their neighborhoods. And if we're really serious about maintaining economic diversity within our neighborhoods, the preservation piece will be equally as important as the new construction piece. So it really is going to be a balanced plan that continues to reinvest in the assets we already have and does everything we can with every tool in our toolbox to incentivize smart new construction, mixed income, mixed use housing.
Well, this is so central to the future of the city. If you succeed, the city succeeds. So Alicia Glenn, the brand new deputy mayor for housing and economic development, and Carl Weisbrod, the brand new chair of the City Planning Commission, good luck to you both, and thank you so much for coming on. I hope we can talk frequently.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a different point of view than the dominant one in the American media on the Ukraine crisis. Stay with us.